All right, hello everyone, and welcome to our second recording here of Podvisors with David and Andrew. We're broadcasting from a different location this week. We've upgraded. We're here in Penfield Library Room 210, which we learned was a podcast recording room. Andrew, how's it going over there?
It's going pretty well. A pretty sweet location, actually. I'm super excited to be here, to have these microphones, to have a soundboard. There are sound effects that I could deploy at any second. So if I'm feeling it, who knows? But we're not alone today, David.
We're not.
It's you and me, plus our colleague, Sean Milligan.
Sean, welcome.
Introduce yourself.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here. My name's Sean Milligan. I'm an academic success advisor. I'm also our transfer success advisor. And in addition to that, I adjunct in the English and Creative Writing Department here at SUNY Oswego.
Awesome. Well, welcome. Thanks for joining us. We're saying in a very formal manner, even though we're always right down the hall from
thanks for having me.
One another. Sean sells himself short. He does a lot of really, really great stuff. We've worked on research together. We do a lot of different things, so very exciting to have you here. So, fellas, today we're going to be talking about a couple of different topics, but we're hitting the week five mark here during this semester, and some of the honeymoon phase is starting to wear out a little bit. Some troubles, some difficulties might be popping up, so I think we're really going to focus today on what are some challenges, common challenges students might face, maybe some ways to overcome those, or just to be aware of those and help people to navigate through. You know, when the going gets tough, what do you start doing?
Yeah. And so we'll talk about, you know, how to overcome those challenges. What are some of the common struggles that you'll have early on in the semester? So it could range from, you know, your time management to imposter syndrome, questioning if you're in the right major. And if you have questions about, you know, transfer related matters, we've got Sean here to talk about those today if need be. So those are just some of the topics that we'll probably cover in today's episode.
Definitely. Well, why don't we get us started? We do have a special guest here. Sean, as you're beginning to meet with your students this semester, we're getting to that point where some of the gloss, some of the exciting feelings, or maybe you're wearing off. First test grades, quiz grades are coming back. Maybe you're giving some tough feedback to some of your students in your English class as well, even. What types of things are you beginning to see with your students? What conversations are you having?
I think for me, the challenges that I'm seeing at this point, about 5 weeks into the semester, are really split between two categories, social and academic. Working with my transfer students in particular, I'm hearing from them that some of them have had great success making connections, meeting people, but it's really easy. You mentioned imposter syndrome earlier. For transfer students to be susceptible to imposter syndrome, they're coming from a different university. They're learning to navigate an entirely new environment, and it can sometimes be really easy to feel like everybody already knows each other. And so a lot of my transfer students are expressing difficulty making connections. If they even go to a club meeting, sometimes it feels like everybody in the club or student organization already knows each other. So the social component's really difficult. Academically, we're approaching midterm season pretty soon. Students are starting to take their very first exams, discovering how hard that math class really is, that science class, maybe discovering that the strategies they used in high school aren't, you know, carrying over and providing them with the same success in college. So really kind of facing those first big grades coming back in. That's the, you know, academic challenge.
Yeah, you know, and to further go with that imposter syndrome, right, to maybe define that a little bit further, is that sense that, do I belong here, right? Am I smart enough to go to college? It seems like everyone else has it together, but I just don't. I've actually gotten quite a few emails with that exact phrase right there. You know, it seems like everyone else has it together and everyone else knows what they're doing, but I feel really lost. And that can be really, really tough to overcome. Andrew, are you starting to hear a little bit of that from your students too?
Absolutely. I think I had this conversation yesterday with a student regarding, you know, being in a class and not knowing the material already and feeling like others did. And so as a result of that, feeling like they don't belong in the class. And I had to remind them that you're here in college to learn. So if you don't know, that is actually kind of the point of being here. And we hope that you don't know so that you can learn. And for some, they might have that foundational knowledge. Maybe they took a similar class in high school or a different class at another institution that's similar. And so that foundational knowledge does certainly help in your understanding and learning, but is not necessary in order to learn. So I think it's one of those things where once you start experiencing more college classes, you get used to that idea that, you know, there's things that I'm not going to know even in an intro level college class.
Yeah, I mean, you're being introduced to the topic for the first time, so you go in there almost assuming that, you know, why should I know anything at all? One of the things I really try to remind students of, too, when I'm meeting with them is this idea that, you know, the institution has admission standards, right? You wouldn't have been brought in here if we didn't believe that you could succeed, if we didn't see in you the ability to achieve. So lean back on that a little bit. You know, you've accomplished things, you've overcome challenges in the past, and lean on all of those great opportunities you've had, things that you've done that show your merit and your strength and worth. And don't forget about those. It's easy to get dejected in that moment, but believe in yourself too. And it's not easy. It's not easy to do, Sean.
I think that's a great point, and that's something I also tell my students all the time, you know, that we have admission standards. You met our admission standards. You can succeed. We brought you in here to SUNY Oswego because you have the capacity to do well and succeed and achieve your dreams. I think that one thing students can do to help combat imposter syndrome is, as you mentioned, to kind of look back at prior accomplishments as proof of their capacity for success. So look at the fact that you did make it into SUNY Oswego, so you met our admission standards. Another piece of advice is to, if you don't already have a resume, create a resume and then update it as you go. Every time you have a new accomplishment, if you've done volunteer work, if you have student employment, as you earn different awards and recognitions, constantly update your resume, and that keeps fresh in your mind the different things that you are achieving.
All right, Sean, pop quiz here. I don't have a resume. Where can I go on campus maybe to get help in developing one?
Oh, great question. I would go to our Office of Career Services.
Very good, very good. And if you don't have a resume yet, you know, you might not have one. Take some time to develop one, and it's never too early to begin that. One of the piece of advice that I've received over time that I think has been helpful is to keep that constantly updated, because you do so many small things over time, whether it's you attend a workshop, you go listen to a speaker, you get involved with a volunteer opportunity, and you don't want to forget those things. So keeping either a file or keep it constantly updated is really important.
And it's, you know, if you're going to go to a resource like Career Services to work on your resume, I think this also ties into one of those struggle areas we're seeing right now with students regarding time management. I've heard or read in our GST 104 vibe checks that some students, what they're noticing right now is that balancing things. They're getting involved, they're doing stuff on campus. You know, my advisees for the most part are from communication studies, so a lot of them get involved with things like WTOP or WNYO or the Oswegonian. So they find themselves getting involved in these activities and then realize, oh, I actually have to now manage my time, because in order to do this quote-unquote extracurricular, I need to balance that alongside the work that I'm getting done in my classes. And many students have noted that in high school they could get away with maybe procrastinating more. Perhaps it was because an instructor gives you an opportunity to turn in things past the deadline, or your schedule is so compact that you just go class to class to class, and then the extracurriculars happen afterwards. But here in college, your classes could be at varying different times throughout the week, where you might have a 3-hour gap in the middle of the day. And while it's easy to go back to the dorm room and maybe lay down, take a quick nap, pop on Netflix, managing your time effectively means that you're using that space in order to get assignments done. So that way you can go to the WTOP meeting. So that way you can work on the script for your show. So that way you can write that article. So finding the places to really sit down and focus to get work done, I think, is a radically different experience than what many students, especially those coming from high school, are needing to adjust to.
And you mentioned adapting from the high school scenario of maybe your teacher accepts late work up until the very last day of the year. I think in general, that's a really tough adjustment for a lot of college students, just understanding that every one of your professors can have totally different policies. So one professor might accept late work, no penalty, for the entire semester, whereas another professor, a little bit more strict and firm with deadlines, you have to get your work in by the deadline, and if you don't, it could be a zero with no opportunity to make it up whatsoever. So just learning to navigate the different syllabus policies that every professor has, I think that's very different from the high school environment, where policies tend to be more uniform and standardized to an extent.
One of the good examples I've heard in the past was that, you know, when you're in that college environment, you have 4, 5, or 6 different bosses going on at once. And you can imagine if you're all in all those different jobs, how hard it must be then to keep track of all those things. I've had students who, you know, share pretty regularly, oh, my instructors don't use Brightspace at all. Brightspace being our learning management system, right? So if I use it exclusively then for file uploads, for disseminating things, and this is a student's first time ever, there's going to be a little bit of a learning curve. And then I can choose as the instructor to work and adapt with them. And then it's also incumbent upon the student to take time to learn that, to ask questions as well. But that all goes back to that time management of trying to balance things out, trying to figure it out. In such a way that you can be successful all the meanwhile, if you're a new student, trying to still make friends, learn how the college environment works, still figuring out, you know, week four, week five, oh no, I accidentally mixed my colors with my my white t-shirts and everything, and now I got pink t-shirts or blue t-shirts, and I wasn't meaning to do that. What time am I waking up in the morning? Because there's not someone at home to get me on the bus or out the door. A lot of different things going on that mental overload, that cognitive overload, because you're just trying to stay on top of things. And one other thing briefly I'll mention is that with time management, there's, I think, two different challenging but very separate time management challenges. And the first is when you have so much time that you don't know what to do with it, right? There's almost this illusion that, oh, I can keep doing it later, I can keep doing it later, because you have a lot, but then later never comes, or it comes too quickly. Maybe that's a better way to say it. And then the other is, I want to do everything, right? I am in my first semester of classes, I'm learning how to study, but I want to do this club and organization, and I want to hang out with friends, and I want to get a campus job. And it's finding that balance without that home structure, home support that you might have had familiarity with for however many years before that develops that comfort and that ease that allows you to take risks and fail a little bit without having everything kind of go out from underneath you. So it's a whole different universe and environment, especially when you're starting off for the first time. And true whether you're a first-year student or a transfer who's adapting from a new institution as well.
Well, and I think that's where, you know, advisors can come in and help support you as the student. So if you are finding yourself, you know, feeling like you're juggling too many things, or you want to be juggling and you can't figure out how to juggle those. I mean, you're not coming to me for actual juggling advice. This is a metaphor, obviously, but that's the idea, is that your advisor can be someone to help you figure this out so you're not doing it on your own. And that's one of the key differences between high school and college, too, is that a lot of times now, you as the student, you're taking action. You are advocating for yourself for these things. But you have people around you, such as your advisor, to support you along the way.
Absolutely. Never be afraid to ask for help, to reach out to those resources that are available to you. And most of these resources you're paying for as a student, so take advantage of them. One thing I'd say in regards to time management and procrastination is every human being is susceptible to procrastinating at one point or another. I'm certainly guilty of it myself.
I'm perfect.
David's perfect, but most of us procrastinate at one point or another. I think one of the best things you can do, and it's not going to be something you can necessarily fix overnight, it's a process, you have to develop good habits, but one of the best things you can do is to chunk up your larger assignments. So if you have to write a 30-page paper, or if you have to study for an exam, you know, it can be really daunting to say, oh, today, because I left it until the last second, I have to study for 6 or 7 or 8 hours, and it's probably going to be unrealistic, or that I have to write that entire 30-page paper in one night. So instead, envision it as something where, okay, I'm starting the paper early, but I'm only writing the introduction today. That's it. Then the next day, maybe I take a break. Because you've started early enough, you allow yourself to take breaks and not burn out on these larger assignments. The next day, you write another paragraph. I know it's a really hard thing to develop that sort of mindset and get into that habit of starting things earlier, but you'll find that it saves you so much stress as opposed to waiting until the last second. Or instead of studying for 6 hours in one day, you study for 15 minutes, just a small, achievable, bite-sized amount of studying, but you've started early enough, a week or two ahead of time, so you can study just a little bit each day. I think you'll find that that pays off much more than all in one chunk.
Yeah, and not only are you, truncating the amount of work that you're doing at any given time, but also think about what you're doing in class too. So I think a lot of times as we think about effective, not only study habits, time management, but effective note-taking. So if you are someone who's trying to write down every single word your professor is saying, that's probably not an effective use of your time in the classroom. You want to be able to be engaged with what the professor is saying, participate. And so trying to write verbatim everything that's being said, you're going to miss some things. So it's a balance of making sure you're writing down the important stuff without missing what's happening in class. There's a specific strategy, Cornell Notes, something we'll talk about in EDU 104 if you're enrolled in that course. But I think that's an effective strategy for note-taking. But then that leads you to, okay, so now that I've gotten the gist of what is being talked about in class in my notes, now when I sit down to actually study these notes, I can do it in an effective way as opposed to trying to figure out, okay, here's this entire transcript that I have to sort through and figure out what's the most important, what do I need to know for the exam, and then that can set you up to be able to do assignments, essays, things like that. So if you think about the structure, not only just how you do structure your time, but how you structure taking notes and doing assignments, that's also going to help you be successful.
Well, and Andrew, one of the things you describe right there is something called active learning, right, where you're actually engaging with what you're learning with versus passive learning, where you might just be kind of receiving, taking things in, but you're not critically thinking about it. You're not going back. So that active learning is taking those notes, but then let's develop critical questions from it, which Cornell Notes can help you to do. It is developing quiz questions for yourself, flashcards, working with a group where you're all kind of bouncing ideas off of one another. And that's really important. And all this really ties together because then when you're looking at one of the other early challenges students face, a conversation I had with one of my advisees just the other day, motivation, right? Well, if you're trying to study, you're reading notes and you're reading notes for hours on end, and then you take a quiz and you don't do well on that quiz, you start to take a hit to that motivation because, well, why am I doing this? Why isn't this working? Using the active learning strategies, you can see positive outcomes occur. You can see that I'm studying hard, I'm retaining it, I'm learning something, and that almost becomes self-fulfilling. Like, okay, I'm doing the right thing, I'm working hard, I'm achieving positive results, so I'm going to keep doing it now as well. And we'll have future episodes on things like mindset that go so much further into it as well, right? But it's all about how you approach it, your attitude, your strategies, but also engaging with the material.
So when it comes to motivation, David, I actually wonder if I could pose a question to you, maybe Andrew as well. I was just working with a student the other day, an advisee of mine, and something I hear all the time, I'm sure you guys hear as well, is, well, I'm not doing so well in this class because it's just not interesting to me. It's boring. What advice would you guys give to advisees who are struggling to stay motivated, stay engaged in class, to put in the studying they need to do in a class that they just have no interest in?
Sean, this wasn't in the notes. How are we going to have an answer for this one? Oh, come on. No. So, I mean, there's lots of different ways to approach that. And I approach it from a couple of different topics. So the first thing is sometimes it's just a baseline. Okay, well, is this a course you need, right? You need to accomplish this for a general education purpose. So it can be something as base as, do you want to take this again? And sometimes, no, I don't want to. Okay, you're 5 weeks in. I want you to visualize. You're already 33%. You're a third of the way through. Can you do this just two more times? Yes, I can. Okay, that's not too bad. It might be saying, okay, well, tell me one enjoyable thing you have found out about the class. Well, I like it when we do group work. Okay, cool. So let's look at your syllabus. It looks like you do group work once every week or so, once every 2 weeks. So let's keep going and motivate ourselves so that when you go into that next group work session, you're well prepared and you can be that leader. Or maybe, you know, I find the class a little bit boring, but the teacher does sometimes tell good jokes. All right, cool. So let's lean into those jokes and wait for those moments to happen. Or maybe go talk to that instructor during their office hours. You know, I will be the first to admit that sometimes when I'm presenting lessons, I see the glazed eyes in front of me. Today I was teaching in class and the room was just very, very warm. I was sweating the entire time. And I know it was a struggle for some students. But when I'm sitting face-to-face with them talking one-on-one, we're usually pretty animated and engaged, and sometimes it's just the environment. So even getting to know that professor, developing that personal connection, and when you are personally engaged with that person, you're probably going to be a lot more invested, and you want to succeed as well. So there's lots of ways to answer that, and I don't know if there's one size fits all, a panacea, whatever the phrase is, that is the instant solve. But as an advisor, if I'm working with advisees, I'm going to get to know my advisee and ask them what motivates them, and we're going to dive deep into that class and even try to find just one thing.
I think one thing that I like to do is normalize this experience for students to realize that over the course of 4 years in higher education, you're probably going to take several, if not many, courses that don't intrinsically motivate you. So it's finding those extrinsic motivations to do well in the class and to show up and do all the things that you need to do. So find what might motivate you. Perhaps it's getting together with a group of people. So you're not alone in this experience. There's probably others in the classroom who feel the same way. So you're going to make sure you work together as a team to support one another and probably get additional support out of the classroom meetings. But David, one thing that I highly recommend that you mentioned was talk to the professor. Yeah. I think a lot of times when it might be I don't want to say boring class, but a class that doesn't motivate you intrinsically, there's something missing there. And perhaps by going to the professor's office hours and sitting one-on-one to have a conversation, to talk about the content, it still might not interest you afterwards. But you get to hear perhaps the passion from the instructor and see why it motivates them to either teach this course or how they got in this discipline. And I think that can change your perspective on future courses going forward, where, yeah, it might not interest you and not be the thing that motivates you when here at SUNY Oswego in the spring semester when there's nothing spring about it. It's basically winter for 3 months.
We have 2 weeks at the end of April, yeah, early May. Come
right
on.
When we get to the end.
Don't take those away
semester.
From me.
But the point is, like, you know, we're going to have those days where it's a little scary out there to get to class. And so, how do I motivate myself to go, despite the snow? By seeing that the professor that's teaching the course is passionate and motivated to teach, that might drive you to do your best. And if you've not developed that rapport with them, that could be one of the things that's leading you to not be motivated. I know when I see someone get excited about something, even if I don't have interest in it, that can help me be more excited to do those things. So I think just talking to the professor, going their office hours, is a really simple strategy to not only help with motivation, but will likely also help you do better in the class to get content that maybe you miss because you're starting to feel the fatigue of boredom set in and you're struggling to pay attention. So go to those office hours, get the additional support. And then you get to, like I said, build that rapport with the person to really get to know them for their expertise.
One of the other things I'll maybe say briefly as well, and this is kind of what putting the cart before the horse or whatnot. But if you're in a class that you're struggling to get fully engaged in, even though it might be hard to do, make sure you're still intentionally doing those readings, doing those kind of preparedness assignments. And then when you go into the class that day, have a couple of intentional questions that you have from that, right? So I'm going to give an example that doesn't apply to me, but it might apply to some. I am a huge history nerd. Love my history classes. When I did the readings, I was excited about them, and I always had questions ready to go. If I'm going into that class and I have questions, I already have an investment because I want to ask those questions. And then I'm going to be more motivated to pay attention to see, okay, is my question going to naturally be answered? Or when is it going to be my time to ask that question as well? So by giving yourself more personal investment, more connection to what you're doing, and it could be something as simple as maybe you struggle with chemistry. Okay. Maybe you look at the material that's coming up in the next couple of days and you watch some YouTube videos, right? And sometimes those multimedia approaches as well can be really motivating and exciting, and that spurs that interest as well. There's lots of different kind of materials or topics out there that you might not have a natural interest in the moment, but if you dive a little further, you might think it's kind of cool. So it's all about taking that first step, giving something a try. And I also think, again, going back to mindset, which I'm sure we'll have a whole other episode on in the future, not walking into the class with this disposition or this prejudgment that I'm not going to like this class. I'm not going to think ahead of time about it, that this is not going to go well for me.
Another thought that just occurred to me, and David, you know, talking about your passions. In my Star Wars class, Star Wars is a passion for me. It's why I'm teaching a class based on Star Wars. But the idea behind the course is I've connected several things in my professional life back to Star Wars as like a reference to and a way to connect the dots and better formulate my understanding around the given topic. So what's your passion? How could this tie back to the course that you're in? And so my goal for students in the Star Wars class is, you know, there's probably, as a Star Wars fan, some reference, some tie-in, some mention of something that relates to the coursework that has nothing to do with Star Wars. So perhaps you're like a baseball fan and, you know, your team is doing really well and it's like a stats class and now you're into the stats of things like that. That might be a motivator for you to tie it back to something that you're already interested in. So bring your own passions into courses that might be completely on the surface, not relevant to that, but perhaps there's something there. And always ask your professor, like, hey, is this a relevant example to the problem? And if they're not familiar with the source material, like they haven't, read the latest Star Wars, novel that ties back into that episode from the TV show that they never watched. That's okay. You can talk through perhaps in the office hours of how that example is relevant and make sure it aligns with whatever is, you know, being taught that day in class.
I think that's great advice from both of you, and I love that you're focusing on both extrinsic as well as intrinsic motivators. One last really quick piece of advice I would give is sit towards the front of the classroom if you're not doing so already. You'll be more engaged, even if it's still not your favorite class, not the most fascinating material to you personally. You'll still be more engaged, you'll retain the information better, and maybe, just maybe, it'll help you to resist that temptation to get on your phone if you know that the professor is, you know, just a few feet away from you, you're in the front row. So you'll resist those distractions so you can focus on the class material.
Definitely. So while we have Sean here today, I think it is also the perfect opportunity to speak directly to our transfer students as well. So as Sean mentioned, one of his roles is as the Transfer Success Advisor. So Sean teaches a course, GST 315, Transfer Success Seminar. It's similar to our GST 104 course that many of you students are taking in the first semester, but all focused on that transfer experience. I know Sean, with some of our sister institutions, is also working on developing a transfer summit coming up pretty soon so we can ease the pathway for brand new students coming in and hopefully develop more collaboration. But Sean, as we look at the transfer experience in particular, are there unique challenges that you see our current transfer students facing, things that have come up in your class or that they're connecting to you about?
Yeah, absolutely. So I already mentioned the social component where sometimes transfer students can irrationally feel like they're outsiders, like they don't belong. So making connections, feeling like all of your classmates already know each other, but not just the classmates. I heard from a student the other day that it feels like all of their classmates already know the professors and have developed good working relationships with them. So one of my psychology transfer students was a little bit envious that one of their classmates was talking about doing research with a professor. And so this transfer student expressed to me that, you know, how am I expected to have that relationship? I just got here at SUNY Oswego. I don't know these professors yet. How can I feel comfortable asking them, like, hey, could I do research with you? Are there any projects I could help you on? And the piece of advice that I gave that student was, you know, wait out the class, participate in class, get to know that professor, go to office hours, because that's another great way to get to know your professors. And I think that will come with time, even if you don't immediately, you know, week five, feel like you know your professors that well. I think by the time the semester's over, if you put in the effort, you'll feel comfortable asking them for opportunities, asking them for letters of recommendation. It comes with time. And the students who are already working with professors in a professional capacity, it took them time to get there as well. They just kind of have a head start over you. So those are some of the challenges that transfer students are facing. Another thing that a student told me the other day, not specific to transfers necessarily, is that, as we mentioned, we're heading into midterm season in probably just a couple of weeks. A lot of students have had maybe a small quiz here or there, maybe some homework assignments, but they haven't had like that full big exam where 30% of their grade yet, and they're nervous because going into the first exam, I think in some ways it's more challenging than exams 2, 3, and 4 because you don't quite know what to expect. Like once you've taken a couple of tests with a professor, you get a sense of like, oh, these are the types of questions that professor likes to ask. I know the types of questions that are likely to appear on the next exam. So there's a lot of apprehension going into that first exam or midterm exams.
Yeah, definitely. When we're looking kind of how do I want to say this? Well, when we look kind of going back to transfer students in particular, one of the challenges I think that you see, and correct me if I'm wrong here, is that, you know, I say this phrase transfer student, but that's a very broad phrase. And it doesn't necessarily say a whole lot, right? So I'm sure in your class, right, you have some who transfer students who came from community colleges. You have some who came from other four-year institutions. You have some who might be coming in at the sophomore level. Some who are finishing up with senior level. You have some who are 19, 20 years old, and you might have some adult student learners as well, right? So when we're looking at these topics of things like motivation, like engagement, like being able to be successful, like making connections, right? You know, you just mentioned there, okay, this returning students have these connections with others. That might look very different for that adult student learner who they're going to classes, but then immediately afterwards they're heading back home to take care of a family member or to take care of an aging parent. as well. I'm bringing this all around eventually as I go here. But as an advisor now, right, knowing that we have so many different people to connect with and engage with, how do you manage all that, Sean? How do you kind of work through your advice? How do you support each person, knowing that they bring so many different and unique experiences? Do you have just blanket advice you give everyone, or do you tailor it to that student? What do you do?
That's a really challenging question. I think my answer is that I definitely tailor my advice to the individual student. I think you have to, because like you mentioned, you can have a non-traditional student. I have a student who proudly told me when I first met him, I'm the oldest student on SUNY Oswego's campus right now. I think the gentleman's in his 70s. And then I have other students that are coming in on a more traditional path, sophomores, juniors. And so you definitely have to tailor your advice to the individual student. So there are some non-traditional students who tell me point blank, you know, I'm not necessarily interested in making connections, going to clubs, going to student organizations.
I just want to get the degree, do what I got to do, professional advancement.
Absolutely. And I think that's okay if that's what aligns most effectively with your goals. And so it really takes an individual approach. But advice that I would give, regardless of age, regardless of situation, is that, first of all, you do belong. And then second of all, it's never too late to get involved with student organizations. And if you're not necessarily looking for the social component to make friends with people who might be in a totally different age bracket from you, maybe an entirely different generation, you could maybe still join, for example, Psychology Club, an academic-oriented student organization where you're adding to your resume, networking, making connections in that capacity as well.
Oh, and again, don't be afraid to talk to your professors.
Yeah.
Like if the... to highlight the concern, Sean, that you brought up of, you know, some transfer students feeling like left out because they weren't here to build those relationships with their instructors. Well, now's the chance. And in some ways you are playing catch up, right? Because you might not have been here as long as some of those peers that you're noticing, but you have the opportunity still. So get out there. And it, maybe you have to push outside your comfort zone if you're not feeling comfortable to do that. But I would wager many of your professors also want to meet with you. They want to talk to you. They want to hear about what interests you have. And if there's any overlap and you want to get involved in their research, I can't imagine too many professors are going to shut the door at that. They might say, you know, I can't right now this semester because I already have a research assistant or I'm doing this. But that doesn't mean that there's not going to be an opportunity in the future. So don't be scared to talk to your professors.
Yeah, you know, and even if the one perspective is you're playing catch up, the other perspective is you have two institutions to draw upon for connections to relationships. So you might have professors here at SUNY Oswego, but you might also have professors at your community college as well. And that's a whole other realm of references, of support, of ways to connect and overlap too. So lean into what you do have, right? It's not about what am I behind in, but it's what can I take advantage of in that broad array of life experience.
That's a really good point. That's something that recently came up in my transfer success seminar, is the idea that as a transfer student, it might feel like you were leaving your social web behind, all of your social support pieces, where you did know an advisor really well at your previous institution. You did know a couple of professors and maybe have a friend group or a peer group that you knew really well. And it feels like you're kind of starting fresh here. But don't forget that you can still, in many cases, draw upon those pre-existing resources. I'm sure if there's a professor that you took three classes with that you had a great relationship with, you could still reach out to them for advice, for mentorship, for a letter of recommendation, even if you're no longer currently a student at their institution.
Awesome. And I really love that. I think it's a great advice to maintain those connections and maintain those relationships. You never know when you're going to need to draw upon those.
Absolutely.
Later on there. I think we're kind of coming to the end here of our current conversation, but I always like to wrap it up with some kind of fun little tidbit or fact and everything. And I pre-posed this question to our podcasting session today. But I want you to think about your favorite Oswego bite. Maybe that's a location. Maybe that's something on campus. Maybe that's something in town. If you were to recommend a place to grab a bite to eat, something to eat to our listening audience, Andrew, I'm going to look at you. Pressure is on. What would you say?
Oh, I'm going to give a lame answer.
Oh, come
to
on.
This. Well, I mean, I enjoy it, but I wanted to give a shout out to Green Planet Grocery.
Nice.
They are not too far away from campus. Definitely within a short walking distance if you're willing to make the trek. But I'm sure you could also hop on the bus and get pretty close and walk there too. But the reason why I bring it up is a lot of times, as someone who has, you know, special dietary needs, you might be looking for something that our campus actually, we have a great campus for dietary restricted, you know, food choices. So it's not to say you can't get options here on campus, but there might be some things that aren't available, more like grocery store type items. So I recommend checking out Green Planet. If you have any dietary needs, you're looking for organic type foods, you know, even some alternative type of, I don't want to say like homeopathic medicine, but I think they do have things like that there as well. But, you know, it's just something to find that niche dietary need that you might not be able to get here necessarily by just like going to Crossroads. But there are lots of great options here on campus. So shout out to Green Planet Grocery, because I do visit that place fairly often.
Sean, what do you think?
Absolutely. That's a great recommendation. For me, I'll give one recommendation off campus and one on campus for our SUNY Oswego students. So my off campus recommendation is a relatively new place, Old City Hall Brewery, where you can go for great burgers, pub fare, stuff like that. Maybe a little bit on the pricier end for a lot of student budgets, but it's not too bad. And then on campus, my weakness is the scones that you can get from the Lake Effect Cafe and Penfield Library. I know scones are probably like 600 calories a piece.
But they're good.
They're kind of an indulgence for me. But stop by, pick up a coffee and a scone.
Definitely. Well, and Sean, you mentioned Old City here. There, a little bit of history, right? So it's old but new, right, at the same time.
Absolutely.
That it previously was a bar, and also Water Street Cafe, which was a little kind of bite-to-eat place, but they revamped it, refurbished it post-COVID. It's really, really wonderful now, so I think that's a great recommendation. So I'll give one here on campus. And you know what? I'm a sucker for a good deal. I always enjoy being able to get a lot of bang for my buck, and I feel like anytime I do go to Crossroads or Palace, I'll just very broadly recommend the campus center spots. I feel like I don't spend nearly as much as if I go off campus, but I get a good hearty meal. I'm always a big fan of the Taco Tuesday, whatever taco option they have that day. I'm getting a sandwich and fries from up top at Crossroads. Always get a lot of fries. I never feel hungry afterwards and everything. So I bang for my buck. I think the Campus Center ones on campus eats can't be beat. And I'll mention very briefly, just to put this out there, we are not paid for any endorsements or anything of that nature here. This is just our fun little way to, I think, wrap up the podcast with not just academic advice, but also Oswego insights and advice as well.
Yeah, David, I love that you also mentioned Crossroads, because, shout out to Crossroads. Seriously, I get my need to have something greasy. It's like a grease craving. Like, I smell French fries, you know, walking through the hallways of campus center. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to go to Crossroads, get some French fries to satisfy that.
On occasion, I'll have the kids into the office, especially over the summer, and if I need a bite to eat, getting the popcorn chicken, that's a full cup of popcorn chicken. You get a lot of stuff there, and they usually don't finish it. When I benefit them, because I get to eat their extra popcorn chicken. But cool. Any final word before we wrap up for today?
No, just thank you for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Awesome. Sean, thanks for being with us. And again, everyone, Sean Milligan, Transfer Success Advisor, Academic Success Advisor in the Advisement Center. If you are a transfer student, make sure to check out any emails you might receive from him. Look for GSD 315 as well if you're in that class. He's a great source of information in addition to whoever might be your primary advisor as well.
Yeah. So thanks for listening, and hope we catch you next time.
Take care.